Good afternoon, Greater Philadelphia area. This is Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Amy Q. Sarah's on vacation. We've got killer agent from our team, super realtor, Amy Q in the house. Very grateful to have you on. And we are covering all kinds of stuff today on the show. We've got the Fed meeting reaction after the 50 basis point drop. We're going to talk about some more information about clear cooperation and some branding myths debunked by Sharon Srivatsa of Real. And lastly, we're going to talk about how Amy Q is taking the real estate market by storm in our local marketplace here and going to everything that's making her successful. So if you get some value out of this, you'll like what you hear, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. And if you want to schedule a call with our team and talk to Amy about your real estate needs, you can do that with the link in the comments. So the Fed meeting, Amy, we know what happened. 50 basis point drop. Felt like the whole market kind of, you know, eased a little bit here. And there was some good things that happened there. So what's your reaction to the 50 basis point drop before we get into everything Jerome Powell said and what's happening in the market? How do you feel about this? What are your clients saying about this?
Well, thanks for having me, Tom, first of all. And second of all, yeah, it's a lot of positive feedback. I received a few calls just this weekend all asking, hey, you know, this puts me in a better position. What does this mean for me? So a lot of conversations, drumming up a lot of activity, more showings, definitely more showing inquiries this weekend.
So we're seeing activity pick up. And I think the thing that I noticed that I don't think a lot of agents and even consumers understand is what the rate cut means for mortgage rates. Because it's not, the Fed doesn't set the mortgage rate, right? So it depends how the market reacts to this. So did you have to explain that to anybody? Like, was that something you had to have a conversation about? Because I don't think everyone understands.
Yeah, I did. I got a little deeper into like some numbers. I looked at what they had been looking at and their prices and where that put them. So we did have to get a little deeper, but most of them understood, hey, this is going to save me money. And that's what, that's, you know, main importance to them.
So you're feeling that there's more showings. Showings were up 2.4% compared to the previous week in our entire MLS. And remember, this news didn't drop until Wednesday. So you only had really like a half week there for things to kind of pop up. So we'll monitor this number here pretty closely. And I'm clear it probably means a couple things for the market. One, you know, they did come out and say at the comments afterwards, and Jerome Powell's comments are always like the most important thing. We can expect another 50 basis points of cuts later this year. So between now and the end of the year. So this isn't like a one-time deal. And to me, it looks like the start of a new economic policy. Because remember what happened when they started hiking rates. And it seems like the Fed is now, they got inflation down. It softened. The labor market softened. So that what does that mean for the market? And I'm clear we're going to see more homes come to the market. Bankrate.com did a great study where only 5% of home sellers, and I want to get your feedback on this, only 5% of home sellers felt comfortable listing and moving with rates at 6%. Is that an accurate feeling with the folks that you're talking to?
That's a tough one. I would say yes, only because the ones that had to move always had a certain, like a special circumstance. Mm-hmm. So yes, I had so many people from even Christmas of last year, like December of last year, saying, let's talk in the new year when rates drop. Mm-hmm. Let's talk. So it had been, you know, communication every 2-3 months with them, and now I had good news to bring to them. So that was where I feel as though they're ready now. They're like, you know what, this is looking better. And, you know, with the talk that they might even drop one or two more times before the end of the year is positive, right? They liked that.
Well, there was a big debate of, was it going to be 25 or 50 basis points? And the odds were all over the place. At one point, it was like a 65% chance we'd only see 25. Then this time last week, it was basically like a 50-50 shot. We were going to see 50. So the 50 was well received. I think that was a good move by the Fed. And some of the other comments here, I want to get your reaction to this, because the interviewers at the Federal Reserve press conference, I thought, did a good job. So the first question that was asked, this came from Bloomberg, how the committee is thinking about the persistence we've seen in housing inflation. Do you think you can return to 2% with housing inflation where it is? Because we know the Fed, they've targeted 2% as like their magic number where they're trying to get inflation down to. And he said housing inflation is the one piece that's kind of dragging a bit, and that as long as the market rents remain under control, the outcome is not in doubt. And what he talks about with market rents and owner's equivalent rent is coming in high, which is a made-up number. Owner's equivalent rent means if you were to rent your house out, the hypothetical rental payment, what that would be. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Right, like, it's not a real number. So it looks like they kind of are aware that housing is the one drag here. He did say we will get down to 2%, I believe, and I believe that ultimately we'll get what we need to out of the housing services piece as well. Do you see housing inflation cooling?
Ever so slight. Ever so slight from this, from last year to this year. Inflation is still so high, and I don't know where he's coming from with that comment, just because it's still so high. I haven't seen that much of a drop for people to make a difference, mm-hmm. for it to make a difference in our market.
Well, and you know, you got to look at the different markets that are out there, too, because like the Northeast, it's totally different. You get down to Punta Gorda, Florida, right? Highest inventory in the country. Austin, Texas. These places, they're seeing negative appreciation because they overbuilt. So, you know, I see the market slowing. I don't think it's going to soften entirely. Like, prices are still going up. Let's be very clear. I think what they're looking for here is a more normal housing appreciation.
And to see rates go as low as 2%, I didn't think we'd ever see that again unless mm-hmm. we had a major major event like COVID, for instance. I just didn't see it going that low. You know, coming into the lower fives mm-hmm. is fantastic. Can we get into the threes? I don't know if that'll ever happen in the next 2 years.
It something bad would have to happen.
I would think so.
I mean, because then the Fed's going to do what they did before. They drastically cut rates. And right now, I mean, you look historically, and we're going to talk about your background here in a second, but like a 5% rate's a pretty good number.
It is.
And a lot of people don't get that. A 6% rate's a pretty good number. Folks are spoiled with these 3% yes. rates. And there is something to that. So I do agree with you. I don't know that we're going to see 2% in housing locally. I think nationally, maybe you could get there with some of these other markets that aren't as strong as where we are. So that's I'm in agreement with you on that. I think the comment's a little off base.
It's a little it's relevant too. 18% people who were signing 18% mm-hmm. in the 80s,
yeah.
they think this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, so and then everybody who bought a home, you know, at 2.5%, it's still too high for them.
Yes.
Well, so you're going to get a little bit of
yeah.
both. Yep.
Here's the next question. This was a question from, it was actually a follow-up to this. So some of your colleagues have expressed concern that with starting to cut rates, you could reignite demand in housing and see prices go up even more. What's the likelihood and how would you react to that? And Powell's response, I'll give you the short version, is the housing market, it's hard to game out. The housing market in part is frozen because of lock-in with low rates, exactly what you talked about. People don't want to sell their home because they have a very low mortgage and it would be quite expensive to refinance. As rates come down, people will start to move more, and that's probably beginning to happen already. But remember, when that happens, you've got a seller, but you've also got a new buyer in many cases. So it's not obvious how much additional demand that would make. He goes on to say the real issue with housing is that we have had and are on track to continue to have not enough housing, and so it's going to be challenging. It's hard to zone lots that are in places where people want to live. I agree with that totally. It's all aspects of housing are more and more difficult, and you know, where are we going to get the supply? And this is not something that the Fed can really fix, but I think as we normalize rates, you'll see the housing market normalize. Ultimately, by getting inflation broadly down and getting those rates normalized and getting the housing cycle normalized, that's the best thing we can do for householders, and then the supply question will have to be dealt with by the market and also by the government. So what do you think about that response there? Because I there's a lot to unpack, and I do agree with some of what he has to say.
Yeah, you went from one to the other. But I definitely think I had three deals just this month where it was a sell and a buy.
Okay.
And those families in particular are like, okay, now I made this great amount of money, this mm-hmm. great value here and appreciation on my property, and now I have to go buy another one.
Yep.
Our inventory is lower, mm-hmm. although it's higher than this time last year. So, yes, you're stuck with these are my options. And now I have to flip this into another home. They don't want to go rent.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult. And we were able to do it. We found, you know, we were able to make them happy. But it was difficult. The challenge was the inventory just wasn't really what they were looking for. And they just made a decision that was best for them.
Well, that's someone that actually has a reason to move. Like they were moving independent of the housing market because you can't time the market here. And that's a really good observation. And these are real life case studies. Like this is something they had a home. It was great. But they were just like, you know what? We need to move no matter what happens here. And when you look at what's going to happen with prices, you can always renegotiate the rate if they do come down lower. I'm not really too optimistic that's going to happen. Maybe a little bit. Maybe like high fives, but you know, you can't renegotiate the price. If prices go up another 5-6%, well, then you're at a higher price and the same rate, which still costs you more.
Yep.
So that's a great observation. So, you know, the press conference I thought was what to expect. I mean, there was a lot of questions, about like frustration that home prices have stayed high. I mean, you know, this is kind of what's going on in the market, and it seems like the Fed is moving in the other direction, which is good. And, you know, hopefully the you're going to see rates come down a little bit as we head into 2025. Now, the thing that I think the biggest question that I've got, I want to get your reaction, Amy, is are these the lowest rates we're going to see in 2024? Because the rates went up after the announcement. They didn't go down, like slightly. I mean, the week before they hit the lowest level since February of 2023. And, you know, we're coming in again. We've seen like 6.11 was the low nationally. We saw rate quotes even lower than that. Do you think these are the lowest rates we see? Or are they going to tick a little lower maybe in the fourth quarter?
I think they're going to tick a little lower. That's my prediction, because I think they're going to tick a little lower coming, you know, the new year.
Okay.
Come the new year. So I feel as though we're going to see a little bit of movement right in that fourth quarter. They don't tend to drop quickly after, you know, they just made a drop.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait another 3-4 months, I think it's possible.
And here's how this could happen. So it's interesting you say that, because Logan Modishami over at Housing Wire, he had a 2024 rate forecast. And it was a big range, but he said between 5.75 on the low and 7.25 on the high.
Hmm.
And to get to the lower end of that range, there would need to be two things. The labor market softened, which it did, and the mortgage spreads improved, meaning the spread from the 10-year yield to where mortgage rates are right now. And we've had both of those things happen. And there's a couple ways rates could go even lower, maybe get below 5.75. So the first would be with mortgage spreads. So what we've seen is a big move this year with mortgage spreads where, you know, it's been very positive, but it was very negative in 2023. We saw some of the largest spreads ever between the 10-year yield and then the actual mortgage rates that were coming in. So you know, if we wanted to get rates down towards 5.75, if we took the worst spreads from 2023 and incorporated those today, mortgage rates would be almost 0.75 higher, 0.68 higher. And we're far from the average spread because we're still 0.85% higher today than the lowest levels of 2022. So if the spreads improve, which is a market reaction, that could bring rates down. Purchase applications, they had another positive week last week. And that's 4 weeks in a row we've seen positive spikes in purchase reactions. So that's certainly good news. And that's another way we could see spreads improve. I mean, if you look at where we are right now, the purchase applications are about to surpass where they were in 2023 this past week, which is very interesting. And then the third way this could happen is if, you know, we added almost 12,000 new homes to the market last week, 11,589. And now we are at the highest number inventory peak for 2024. So all these things are kind of moving the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And as inventory grows, I think you could see pricing get a little more aggressive on mortgages because maybe it's a little harder to, you know, get these people to line up and fill out purchase applications. So
sure.
So you're thinking it's going to happen. I tend to agree, because at the beginning of the year, I don't think it's unreasonable to see like 5.75. It's going to depend on how the fourth quarter goes. It's also going to depend what happens with, like, if people get in that election paralysis that comes up. So there's a couple things to keep our eye on there.
That could be why they lower again in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, for sure.
Anytime there's an election year.
That's very true, because people are trying to get elected. I mean, that's the reality. So how have your lenders reacted? Like, any lenders you're talking to, have they had any reactions to this?
I mean, they love it. You know, they're, hey, bring me some first-time buyers. We have this program, a couple new programs launched.
Mm-hmm.
For first-time buyers, even better than we've seen. We're talking 5% down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who has ever been able to put 5% down? Some of your FHA loans were that aggressive. And we're talking, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, we're talking your regular 30-year conventional. So they were, like, super excited. Immediately, they were sending me information. Hey, you know, let me know. Look at what I got. These are three new programs. Send me your buyers. You know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they were – I got some positive.
Well, I mean, they should be happy, because I think it's been very tough being a lender in this environment, for sure. So then there's, you know, so there was a couple lender reactions that were in the news. So Zillow Home Loans, they published something on Wednesday after the decision, where one of their senior economists said that mortgage payments on the typical home bought today would cost $100 a month less than one bought in May, which is very real. And along with being able to stretch budgets further, buyers may have more supply to choose from, given that inventory's up. Nationally, according to Zillow, inventory's up 22% over the past year. We're seeing the same numbers locally, so that's in line.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something I don't think a lot of people expected. With lower mortgage rates, there could be a good chance buyers face more competition than they normally would in the next couple of months here when the market usually cools off. And lower rates should bring more buyers back into the market than sellers. Are you seeing that people are kind of coming back to the market? Have you had anyone that was like on the sidelines that jumped back in?
Yeah, it was mostly about three of them, actually, that came in.
That's a lot in a week.
That's a lot. And that called me and said, it was always about the rates. Mm-hmm. So I was able to throw them some stats on, hey, look what happened. And they called to ask more information. So whether I can get them to make that move this week, this month, you know, is to be seen. But at least it drums up some positive phone calls.
Well, that's one lender's reaction. Then the other, the Community Home Lenders of America, they came out and said, something that they're a trade group and they support small independent mortgage brokers. And they sent a letter to the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and other federal officials urging them to take action to reduce the historically wide spread between the 30-year and the 10-year. And, you know, we saw some action, obviously, with lowering the rate. And they expressed the belief that mortgage rates could be reduced by 100 to 150 basis points through two key moves. They recommend the Fed suspend runoff of its mortgage-backed securities holdings until the spread stabilizes. So don't sell them. And they also suggested amendments to the preferred stock purchase agreements that would allow Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to purchase mortgage-backed securities and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed securities. So there's some policy stuff afoot here. And I think a lot of people would like to see just a little bit of a lower rate just to make it easier on buyers. I mean,
what's their time frame on that?
I don't think anything's going to happen. I think this is just one of these people like, oh, you should do this.
I don't see it.
There was three senators that came out last week and said they should make a 75 basis point decrease. There's no shot that was going to happen. So trade groups, they come in, they say this stuff, it makes them look good. I wouldn't put too much stock into that here. So the last thing I want to hit on, then we can kind of take a break here because we're talking about a lot of stuff. And then I want to get your advice for consumers that are thinking about transacting, whether it's now or in the next 12 months. Fannie Mae just put out a report that said 2024 could be the worst year for home sales since 1995. Mm. So that's worse than last year.
And why?
So normally listings are up more than 20% from a year ago, but the increase in home prices seen during the pandemic has caused some affordability changes. So the home sales that are anticipated were, you know, this time last year, existing homes and new homes, it's pretty darn close. We saw 4,090,000 existing homes and 666,000 new homes. This year, we're expected to see 4,062,000 existing home sales and 680,000 new home sales, so slightly less. And that would be a 4.2% decline to a 3.86 million sales pace. So, you know, what's interesting is, even though that's happening, I still see opportunities in the market. Do you think they're going to come in below? I mean, it's they're forecasting the overall number is going to be 4.74 million, the slowest pace since 1995. It's about 14,000 sales off from a year ago.
Hmm. Yes. Are we going to have? So is your question? Are we going to have?
Do you think it's going to come in higher or lower? I mean, we're right at that point.
Ugh, I think it'll be lower. I think with these new NAR challenges, I think it might be a little bit lower. I don't know.
I tend to agree. I could definitely see that happening. I mean, I think it's, you know, what's going to happen here is that we're at a point where, like, the year's pretty much, like, you got a couple months left to do some business before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. The die is pretty much cast at this point. Unless we see a major run on the market here in October and November, I don't know that they're going to come in higher. And really what it shows how locked up the market's been. So this rate cut could be the start of something new. And, you know, with that, I think you're going to see there's some good news in housing. So we put together, I want to give Jimmy Mackin some credit. So Jimmy Mackin, it works at Curator. We put an email together that he worked on us with about what the 1,650-day wait. We rolled that out last week. So there's some things to think about here because there's a lot of good things to be talking about with consumers right now. I mean, you have lower mortgage rates could result in more buyers, more refinancing, increased competition, but it should lead to more homes hitting the market, which has been the biggest complaint for people. So if we can see more homes hit the market, that's going to go a long way here.
It definitely will. I struggle seeing the pattern switch between from a seller's market to a buyer's market.
I don't think it's going to change that way. I agree with you. But I think it's just going to make it a little easier for some of these buyers. Like, they have other options.
If we do see an increase of supply, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I agree 100%. We just, you know, think about this time last year. I think things were moving a little bit faster than mm-hmm. they are this September. Maybe I'm wrong.
But, I mean, we'll know at the end of the month, right?
Yeah, so. I feel like things. And don't forget that NAR slowed things down. So it's a new normal right mm-hmm. now people are trying to get used to.
When the market has been a little weird in September. I mean, it's mm-hmm. been, I talked to people all over the country about this. And you know, September is usually a very busy month. Mm-hmm. I'm clear a couple things happened. People got so wrapped up in these NAR changes that they stopped prospecting and working on their business. So that might happen because they're still home selling.
That definitely had something to do with it.
Everyone was all worried. And, you know, what I found, I don't think the NAR changes are going to have that big of an impact on the business if you know what to say and how to say it, which we've trained on a lot. But I mean, yes. there's options out there. We're very fortunate in our state to have the non-exclusive agreement. I think that makes it a heck of a lot easier to meet with people. But there's a lot of agents that still don't know what to say. And it's been, you know, it's a month and 10 days later and they're still kind of in that same boat.
It's a struggle. On our end, it's the new normal and everything we have to get mm-hmm. used to and how we have to speak and what's required. So you have been a busy agent for so many years doing it one way. And now it's like, put the brakes on, stop everything you're doing. So do you have a choice but to step back and make sure you're taking the right steps? So it slows you down.
Yeah, I agree totally.
I didn't like it myself, you know, but it slowed me down a little bit.
Well, and I mean, you know, you learn it and then you just get it down and just keep practicing is the only move. And I do think with this rate cut, it just seems like there's some life that was breathed into the market here, and more people are going to be a little more open-minded about looking for homes in the fall when they normally wouldn't be. So we'll see. I mean, if I'm a seller right now, I'm looking at this as if there's a threat of more inventory, I may want to list sooner because sure. you don't want to be out there with all this different competition. And for buyers, you know, you want to be out there and just constantly monitoring the market. I mean, have you ever had someone give up and like the perfect home comes on the market and then they kind of re-engage really quickly?
Yes. Quite a bit this summer. They were like, oh my God, something came up. And, you know, so, and then we went to go look at it and it's like, where have you been? Mm-hmm. So yes. And, you know, I feel like they get into the market. Then I've had some that say, you know, wait a minute, I'm not comfortable with this anymore. Let me digest it with these changes and things like that. So there's always somebody you have to make happy at the end of the day.
It's the name of the game. So, I mean, if I'm a buyer or a seller right now, I'm at least having like strategy meetings and planning sessions with people, because if you're not doing that, you never know when the right opportunity comes up. And there's so many, you know, case studies of people that, you know, I stopped looking and then this great home came and it sold so quick that I didn't even see it. Yeah. So you don't want to be that person, especially if you're considering making a move.
I had a listing presentation, like I met with a couple who want to list their property last Thursday. And right away, they're like, OK, it's way too many changes. We had been talking about me coming mm-hmm. to talk with them and they were ready. And now he's like, all right, put the brakes. We're going to definitely wait till my daughter graduates. And like all of a sudden mm-hmm. they get cold feet. And it's like, no, you don't have to. I'm going to walk you through all of it.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge to get them to understand everything that's going on.
That's why good agents like Amy know what to say and how to say it, because the worst time to be thinking about that stuff is when you're actually talking to people. So that's how to set yourself up for success in this business. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some more news about Clear Cooperation and debunking some branding myths with Sharon Srivatsa from Real. Next on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.
For the best local mortgage service and great rates on your money, look no further than Mortgage America. We've been operating in the greater Philadelphia area for 40 years with a focus on smooth, easy access to home purchasing. Whether you're a first-time buyer, upsizing or downsizing, or just refinancing, we have programs for you. We also have closing cost assistance programs and access to subsidized interest rates. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. To learn more, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com or give us a call at 610-439-8000. We always have a person available to take your call with around-the-clock human service. Purchase your home with the personalized local service you find at Mortgage America.
Mortgage America is an equal housing lender. NMLS 128501.
When you're getting a mortgage, you shouldn't have to sacrifice great service just to get a great rate. At Mortgage America, we've been lending with this philosophy for over 35 years. We have access to great low rates without the complications and delays of big or online banks. We're a local Pennsylvania lender with loan officers that you can actually meet. As PHFA's number one lender, lender, we specialize in all residential mortgage programs, including first-time buyer programs and low-down payment options. For your free pre-approval, call us at 610-439-8000 or apply online at mymortgageamerica.com.
Mortgage America's equal housing lender, NMLS 128501.
Have you considered a career in real estate? Do you want control over your income? Whether you have a license or not, call us today at 610-692-6976 or visit TomTool.com. Join our team, the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline. Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Amy Q. And we both work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania since 2018. And we are talking about the NAR Clear Cooperation Rule. And it's a rule. It's not a law. I want to really stress this to people here. So if you get some value out of this, you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. And if you want to schedule a call with Amy from our team to understand what all this means for your real estate needs, you can do that with the link in the comments. So clear cooperation. How well do you understand this rule? I'm just out of curiosity.
Not too well.
Okay. And you know why? It's a garbage rule. So I'm going to explain it to you here. So clear cooperation, what it means. I'm going to actually like read it to you here because it's so silly. I just dealt with this with another agent on our team. They've got a buyer that's they actually connected directly with the seller. They've got an agent, and we're making sure everything's compliant to sell the home because of this rule. So what clear cooperation says is that within one business day of marketing a property to the public, the listing broker must submit the listing to the MLS for cooperation with other MLS participants. Public marketing includes but is not limited to flyers displayed in windows, yard signs, digital marketing, brokerage websites, digital communications marketing, multi-brokerage listing sharing networks, and applications available to the general public. So they can't put that out there without having the property in the MLS.
Interesting.
And they have this exemption where if the seller refuses to permit the listing to be disseminated by the service, the participant may then take the listing as an office exclusive, and it'll be filed with the service but not disseminated to all the participants. Filing of the listing should be accompanied by a certification signed by the seller that he or she does not desire the listing to be disseminated. And Section 1.3 is not required if the service doesn't require all listings to be submitted by a participant to the server. So, and then you still have to do that within one day. So what do you think of this rule? Does it make any sense?
No, not at all. I mean, sometimes you have some things you're buttoning up or, you know, finishing. And I mean, when you hit MLS, I get it. You're prepared. But until then, how can you sign one day and then you have 24 hours?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're saying?
Well, but we have the ability to hold that out. You can't start marketing it publicly. So, okay. I mean, obviously, like, we have to help people prep their homes. We do a lot of things most agents don't. So we have to sign that exclusion form that the Bright MLS has. But this says, like, if you're a pocket listing or you don't want people to market the home quietly, your agent can't do any marketing for you without it being in the MLS.
That's ridiculous.
Well, I agree it's ridiculous. And it limits owners' rights. I think that's the problem here. And I'm not saying the MLS isn't the way to go. I want to be very like that. Like
Correct.
Getting the most amount of people interested is going to be the best. But what it does is it limits options. So I want to explain this to you why this might be important. So you're a football fan, right?
I know.
Football. So Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions, he sold his home because people figured out where he lived due to security concerns. And he's worried about. You know, people, I guess, when they lost the NFC Championship last year, they gave him a hard time. They found out where he lived. I mean, that's a whole other thing. But that's kind of what I think a lot of, like, people that they have some sort of public profile, they don't want their house to be out there because it comes like a target for folks. So I can understand the privacy concerns for someone like him or maybe somebody else. But again, the MLS typically is the best way to go.
It is. And think about the last 20 years or, you know, 15 years where how much communication in our office with our agents. Hey, by the way, I remember we talked 3 months ago and I happen to have a house that would fit the bill for your buyers. Or, hey, I was talking to somebody at the game on Friday and this, you know, I have a pocket listing for you. I mean, all the time. So I don't think it's fair. I think it's, you know, taking away a little bit of their right too, as aside from the privacy. I understand what you're saying, but that's one specific situation, not the other benefits of a pocket listing or communication in an office.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, and what I don't like is limiting people's options. If someone wants to do it that way, like, you're almost forcing them to go for sale by owner if they want to do it quietly or list with a non-NAR real estate agent, which That's not good for NAR, right? So, so Robert Refkin, the CEO of Compass, he put together a long piece on Inman News where he talked about how the clear cooperation breaks the code of ethics. So I'm going to give you each one of these codes here. I want to get your reaction. So Article 1, protecting client's interests. When representing a buyer, seller, landlord, tenant, or other client as an agent, realtors pledge themselves to protect and promote the interests of their client. So do you see a conflict there?
No.
So Robert Refkin does with clear cooperation. He says that clear cooperation forces realtors to comply with MLS mandated rules even when they conflict with the first sentence of the first article because it may not be in their best interest.
I don't disagree. MLS is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, and again, he's taking a bigger picture and picking on that one corner.
Mm-hmm. See, I actually think it does violate their best interest. I mean, it's not all, again, it's not always the case, but if someone says, like, maybe they're in a really nasty divorce and they don't want, you know, someone to find out they're moving, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that can go on.
Yeah, you can take that situation and go with it. You know, you might not be able to do that in those situations.
Maybe there's a confidential job opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, what if they're in, like, with, like, the FBI or something and they can't know that they're moving? You know, what if there's, people want to maintain privacy from, like, a family illness or a divorce or something? There's a lot of things to think about there. So,
yes.
And they, you know, it allows sellers to test the market without having days on market accrue. I don't know that you're really testing the market there, but that's another point that gets brought up. So it does look like Article 1, there's a violation.
All right.
Article 3, cooperation with other brokers. Realtors shall cooperate with other brokers except when cooperation is not in the client's best interest. So do you think there's a conflict there?
That's a tough one because whether it's a pocket listing and I'm talking to you about it off the MLS or on the MLS, well, no, I guess it is because what about, you know, what you're offering for commission or, you know, them their rights being protected by the NAR if you're not in the MLS. So, yeah, I think there's a couple there that could be a yes.
So I agree because I think the sale involves, like, let's think about it here, sensitive family legal arrangements, right?
Mm-hmm.
And estate sales involves parties not ready to acknowledge the sale publicly. High-profile clients and law enforcement officials. Like, you never think about law enforcement, right? Like, I mean, that's something that people find out where police officers live. It can be very bad for them. So there's a lot of things here that, you know, and it's, again, they're, realtors are supposed to cooperate except when it's not in their best interest. Well, you know, it might be in their best interest to keep it off the market. So, you know, it doesn't account for situations where sharing the listing on the MLS could harm their confidentiality. Here's the next one. So there's more than one of these.
Okay.
Standard of practice 1.9, client confidentiality. Realtors shall not knowingly use confidential information of clients to the disadvantage of clients or use confidential information of the clients for the realtor's advantage or the advantage of third parties unless clients consent after full disclosure. Do you see a violation there with clear cooperation?
Yes.
I do too. I think it's pretty straightforward,
yes.
Right? So, you know, the fact that he's able to put this article together and say, hey, your rule violates these three codes of ethics, to me, what I see happening here is I think NAR is just, I mean, it's some good leadership by Robert Refkin. It's something that needs to get revisited. And the DOJ is targeting this rule because of the forced MLS usage. That seems to be the real problem here. So what do you think about clear cooperation?
I think there are rules and laws in place to protect the sellers, you know? So I feel as though it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's all ethics, which is good to have mm-hmm. when you're conducting any type of business, not just real estate.
Well, and I think that the idea behind clear cooperation is, like, the buyers should know about everything. But
shouldn't?
They should. They should know about every home that hits the market. They want to know, and it's going to create an even playing field. But that's not really most people use the MLS, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can tell a seller what to do with their home without giving them options. I think that's the biggest problem here.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Very true.
So good article by Refkin. The NAR Committee on Ethics and Standards is meeting again in October to talk about repealing this law. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, they had another one of those closed-door meetings. So let's move on to the branding myths from Sharon Travatza. So I've known Sharon a while. He's the president over at Real. I love the stuff he points out. So he's debunking common branding myths for real estate agents. So the first myth he talks about is the how versus what of your brand. And he pointed out that the key to personal brand is the first word, personal. And this is why the exploration phase is personal. If you don't know what makes your content uniquely yours, no one else will either. So kind of being your own, like being your own person, like do you find that helps your business, hurts your business? Because a lot of people, and I've fallen in this, I'm almost like too professional. And I'm so by the book, and it ended up hurting me in winning business. Have you seen that hurt people when they're not authentically themselves?
Absolutely.
100%. Tell me more about it. What do you think goes wrong? What goes right, Amy?
I feel as though successful agents they have to be themselves. Mm-hmm. They have to represent who they are, how they're going to help you, how they're going to get you that end result. And if you are, you know, outgoing and are good with certain information, good at pairing, you know, people with this type of home or this is what you've been looking for, you have to show them. You have to be transparent. You have to give them everything. And that's going to help you, you know, shine. And they're going to say, I want to work with that agent. That agent knows what they're talking about, conducts themselves in a professional manner, and is themselves. Like, we talk about that a lot with different agents on our team. Mm-hmm. You know, bring value to the table. And if it means who you are and how you conduct yourself and how you make sales, do it.
100%.
I agree there, because if you're not injecting personality, like, people got to be able to relate to you. And
absolutely,
it's not just winning on personality. You still got to know all the data. You got to have deep knowledge. You got to have all the other stuff has got to be there. You can deliver it in a way that's going to appeal to them, and they see you're a person, not just a commodity or a door opener in the worst case, that can be a challenge. So Sharon says, when you don't have a strategy, everything looks like an opportunity. And he goes on to say, you know, that we need to figure out what your brand is. We need to figure out how your brand is, because how you show up, how you share, how you contribute, that's really important.
100%.
He goes to, I don't understand. And she says, yes, that's the problem, because if you showed up and you knew your how, then you'd figure out the what. So it was almost like tactically inspirational information for his brand, is what he called it. That was his two taglines. So you want to have something similar. So, I mean, that's kind of, you want to know what values you're portraying out there, like being professional. That's one of our values here. That doesn't mean you're always like all buttoned up. It means you communicate with people in a professional way. You show up looking a professional way, and you handle yourself in a professional manner. That's not just one thing. So, so you like that one. So here's number two. There's two phases of building a great brand. And he says, when you don't have a strategy, everything looks like an opportunity. So it's important to have the same strategy as you get going, but no idea comes out fully formed. So you have the strategy, but then there's got to be some reasons behind it. So the first phase is the exploration phase, because ideas don't come out fully formed, and which I tend to agree with. So tell me more about the exploration phase. Do you find yourself doing that when you're implementing something new in your business?
I would say yes. I explore all avenues. I always take everything that I can learn about or share with them, and I bring it. So yeah, I do as much as I can.
So like the exploration phase, you got to see what's going on, because if you don't understand that, Amy, then like you can't test out stuff. Like, just because one person does something doesn't mean it's going to come out the same way for you, right? Like, we role play all the time. That's like a testing ground. Right. So you get value out of that stuff when you kind of explore those things.
Absolutely. Because you feel more prepared. You're practicing. You're trying. I grab my kids and I'm like, hey, be my buyer right now. I have to, be my seller right now. They're like, oh, my gosh, Ma. But the value that this team brings to being prepared, feeling prepared, and, and then throwing it onto your seller or your buyer, they feel like, hey, I got somebody who knows the market, knows how to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what happens sometimes when you're exploring, right? Like, you got to test this stuff out on someone that's not a paycheck. You don't want to practice on a paycheck. You're getting your kids to practice. That's awesome. Because you know what? They don't know anything about real estate. Mm-hmm. So they're going to react in a way that a lot of consumers react, because guess what? Consumers don't know anything about real estate either. So
most of them don't.
and then once you get past this exploration phase, then you can see like the progress phase, right? Like you understand, like, all right, we talked about the NAR settlement stuff. So all right, now I've got this objection handler, like, hey, my mom has to sign this. Like, that's worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Well, then when you start using it and you see it work, then you can kind of, you get a better idea. And then maybe you got to adjust it a little more and pivot a little more there, which I think is really important.
Absolutely. So you have to take everything that we implement, learn, strategize here, and make it your own. Mm-hmm. And then you sell yourself. And that's the value of a good agent.
Yeah.
And people usually like to work with you.
For sure. So here's the third branding strategy, and I think this is pretty important, is that if you don't have video, you don't have a brand, right? Now, we do a lot of video here, so I'm not saying that, obviously, I'm a big believer in video, but the flip side is, you've got this thriving business, and you don't do a lot of video, right?
No.
So has that hurt you at all, or do you think it? I mean, I don't think it. Some people think like you have to do this stuff, but it's more about how you show up, and I'll explain in a second.
I guess you answered the question by saying it didn't affect my business. Could I have sold more properties this year doing video? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think the most, listen, video is great. It's another form of getting yourself out there, mm-hmm. advertising, advocating, all of that for yourself as an agent. A lot of times I run against the clock personally. Mm-hmm. Like that's my crutch, you know, with the with the kids at home and everything I have.
Hard to do,
It's hard to do for me. So, but do I do it when I'm writing offers, when I'm getting to know agents, when I need the job done? Yes. So maybe I, at this time in my life, I don't have time for every piece of advertising or however, you know, you want to call it for yourself and for your brand and your business, but I focus on what works and I use it then. I use the videos at that time.
So you hit the nail on the head. I'm focusing on what works. And they give an example of Seth Godin. So if you don't know, he's like this like marketing genius. He didn't do any video. I've seen him speak once. You know what he does do? He does a daily blog. And that works for him. He writes it. He puts the blog out. And he does it every single day. And it's, you know, he's not doing anything for personal branding. But he does this blog. And his cadence, every day I'm putting something out there. It's no different than what you're doing. Because every day you're talking to people, working people in your database, all that sort of stuff. That can be your brand, is that you just follow up really well with people. So,
right.
I you know, these folks that push everyone to do video, you know, I'm a big believer that in real estate, the best thing you can do is just talk to people on the phone. Like, that's number one. Like, and then from there, if you want to do more one-to-many stuff, sure. But that happens when you kind of, you know, when you kind of are able to scale the brand, right? But it's not, you know, video isn't something you, like, have to do. And I think, like, one-to-one video is like, hey, excited to meet you today, Gene and Amy. And that stuff, that's probably more important than having a podcast and doing all this other stuff. And
sure.
I may sound pretty hypocritical in saying that because we're doing this, but the reality is I'm on the phone and doing those things as much as anybody. So I think that's a really good point.
And that's what brings
business, right? 100%. This stuff helps people recognize you. The phone calls, they create conversations,
yep.
and conversations create appointments, and appointments create sales. So
you got it.
Awesome. So very cool stuff here with when it comes to branding. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk all about Amy Q here. She'll even pronounce her last name for you properly, which is why she goes by Amy Q. Next on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.
You shouldn't have to deal with all the red tape when getting your mortgage from a big or online bank. At Mortgage America, we have access to big bank money, but with the personalized and detailed service of a local bank. We are here in your community and ready to serve with fast settlements, low down payment options, and first-time homebuyer programs. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. For more information, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com or give us a call at 610-439-8000.
Mortgage America, legal lender, NMLS 128501.
I'm Tom Tool of the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline. If you're thinking of becoming a real estate agent in the greater Philly area, I have a special offer for you. Our team did $165 million of volume in 2021, making us the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania and a top 1% team nationally. Our agents love us because we offer them a successful career, a great life, and an unbeatable culture. Agents who've been with us for at least a year average 30-plus sales. Even our brand new agents average 17 to 24 sales a year. We offer proven systems and expert training. We help you set more appointments and sell more houses. Now here's the offer. If you don't have a real estate license yet, we offer real estate scholarships so you can get one for free. Check it out at realestatescholarshipprogram.com or visit the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline at tomtool.com. That's Tom, Tool with an E.com. Get more out of your real estate career, and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool. The Tom Tool Sales Group is the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania with over $165 million in volume for 2021. I'm Tom Tool, and our team has achieved that kind of success by being a great place to work with and to work for. No one knows Greater Philly better than we do. We know real estate, but more importantly, we're real people. We hire the best agents, and we give them all the tools to succeed. Even our brand new agents sell 17 to 24 homes a year because our team delivers the best experience in real estate. Teams deliver a better experience than individuals, and we're a top 1% real estate team in the country. We call it AAA service. We're your advocate, ally, and advisor. Because this isn't a transaction to us. It's a relationship. If you're buying or selling a home, call the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Main Line at 610-692-6976 or visit tomtool.com. That's Tom, Tool with an E, .com. Sell your home for more, and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool.
All right. We are back on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Amy Q. And we both work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania since 2018. And we're going to talk all about Amy right now. Amy is a real estate badass. She has been kicking butt with our team. Amy, tell us a little bit about your background here. What did you do before real estate? You know, I mean, you were in real estate before. Tell us just a little bit about Amy so we can get to know you.
A little bit about Amy. I moved from Canada in 1999, right? And then it all started from there. So I got licensed pretty early, right out of school. I always had real estate in my life at some form or fashion. My dad built homes for a living. I had to help in. I had to help so many things. And then I just kind of took it, whether I took it, you know, from him or just as I got older, I always had interest. And then I started a business. My husband and I started a business in 2001 and then, you know, signed with my first real estate brokerage in 2004. And then, you know, I worked with them about 18 years. It was about 18 years. Sold. I remember being fresh, you know, fresh new agent, but was able to sell about 18 homes that year.
Big number.
It was a big number for a new agent. And then
big
I was like,
for any agent, you got to give yourself some credit. Okay. I mean, the average realtor sells like 3 homes a year. Remember this?
Yes, true. 3. That's the average. This is nuts. No, and
crazy business.
I was able to, you know, win a couple awards with them, and things were going really, really great. And then during that time, I was able to accumulate properties and rentals for myself. So that became, it was like a passion that I enjoyed. And then 2008, I bought my second business. And then in 2010, I bought my third. And then all while raising 2 young girls. It was a lot. It was crazy, crazy days. But I always had real estate in some form or fashion in my life. And that's when I continued to manage all of our rentals. Mm-hmm. I helped other people manage theirs. And I learned a lot, you know, flipping, leasing, evictions, court hearings, you name
stuff.
It,
yeah.
I did it. And it was fun. It was fun. But that's pretty much the background.
So you've done everything in real estate, right? And it's kind of what I'm hearing. I mean, you've had all of it. So what attracted you back to the sales side after going through all that other? Because, you know, some people, we see people are here and they're gone a day later in real estate, any company. They think it's easy. They watch these TV shows. Obviously, you came back after knowing exactly what you're getting into, which is a much different perspective, and you're doing really well. So explain to us what kind of brought you back.
I'm glutton for punishment? No. Well, last August of 23, I sold the first business that we started and was looking to dedicate a little bit more time back into the selling side of real estate, not just managing property management, things like that. I needed a change in brokerage, so I was looking for something different. I just wasn't happy with what they were offering anymore. And then I, you know, which led me to you.
Awesome. Well, we're grateful to have you. So to give you an idea, Amy has already sold 17 homes this year, and the year's not over yet. So again, these are incredible numbers. This is almost $8 million worth of volume. So you're seeing all these great results. And I'm a big believer it's because you really care about your clients, probably more than you even think you do sometimes, and definitely more than most agents. What gets you excited to show up every day? Because this is a tough thing. This business, showing up is sometimes the hardest part, meaning showing up the right way.
I know. The colleagues, you know, that we have here, the atmosphere that we have here is awesome. I love helping people. And I a big crutch for me, I would have to say, is I don't know how to take the emotion out of my business because I'm too emotional. I like helping people. I like, if you're hurting, I'm like, it's too much. I take it all on myself. And then when you're happy and I've done that job, then I feel so happy and rewarded that I was able to help you with where you wanted to be. So all of that. But the knowledge and support is exactly what I was looking for in this team. So that's like number one. And this office helped me reach my goals. It really did. It's been awesome to be a part of this team.
Well, you're the one doing the work, so you got to give yourself some credit here. And I think that's the most important thing. But you got to like where you're showing up at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And your environment should help level you up. So, you know, one of the biggest challenges agents have, and you got 3 kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've met them all. Very nice kids. Very well behaved. Like, I mean, it's what you would hope for in your kids. I don't know. My kids, they act like maniacs. But
not true.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. I met your husband, Gene. So how do you hold it all together, or do you not? And maybe you got to like counterbalance sometimes, because a lot of people, like, it's time management is a big challenge in this business. And you got two girls in high school.
It was a lot.
Your son's a little bit younger. I mean, Gene, obviously. I mean, you're doing it all. So how do you do it?
How do I do it? I wonder sometimes if I should start taking medication. I wonder. It's a lot. Like any parent out there, no matter what their job is, it's tough to juggle it all. I feel as though from the beginning, never having an out. My daughter wrote her college essay this week on our businesses and how the household she grew up in.
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes to say, holy cow, we just never stopped. We did what we wanted. We had goals. It was a part of who I am. And it's always a struggle. And so I feel as after reading it, I thought, oh, my God, like, did I scar her? But it was a big part of, I think I just never stopped because I felt like I had the potential to do what I want. It was always something I wanted, I guess. But to go back to your question, it's difficult. There are times it's challenging. It's hard. You have to juggle a whole lot. I have to keep my schedule. You know, people in the office, they'll see me writing something in my book and they're like, what in the world is that? Yeah, this is my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Just like any, I don't know what to say other than every day I get up, I have my list and I don't go to bed until it's done.
Well, and I think that's, you know, when you're a parent in this business and you got other people counting on you, there's not really like a back, when you don't have a backup plan, sometimes you can be that very like best version of yourself. And the fact that, you know, what your daughter wrote, that's actually really cool. Like,
it's,
I mean,
so cool.
And it gives you a different perspective because you don't realize like what that effect is on your kids. That's
and she's going for business and marketing.
How did you feel when you read that essay? I mean, that would have blown me away.
It did. It's incredible. I have to share it with you. I'll share it with you.
I would love to read
it. I just feel as though it was like, wow, this is the impact I made on my own, like 18-year-old next month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, maybe we should have thought about that. But a lot of entrepreneurship in our family, a lot of business ideas, and I feel as though I guess it rubbed off. I don't know about all of them, but at least the oldest, you know.
You know, when you think about it, though, too, I mean, kids are so impressionable, and you don't know what they remember. And now, like, you know, your son's obviously a good bit younger.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what he's going to say, but when your daughter's 18, getting ready to go to school, I mean, that, and, you know, those college essays are a big deal. They make you reflect on life. That's incredible.
Really hard, yeah. But she did good. She did great. And so I feel as though that's just who I am, how I started my adult business career. And
I like it.
Here I am. There's more to come, by the way, so get ready.
Well, I think, you know, what happens is, and we're just getting started. I totally agree, but like when you don't have a backup plan, like you got other people counting on you. I think, you know, some people say, well, I don't have anything. I can do whatever I want and I can spend as much time as I need to in the business. But when you got other people counting on you, I think you work better. You know, you have to be more efficient. You don't have an option. You know what's important and what's not. And in this business, you see people spend time on stuff that has absolutely no impact on how many homes they're going to sell or how many people they're going to help.
Very true. So many times you throw things out in our meetings or whenever we're talking and I'm like, if I could just grab 80% of that and implement it, and I know where my bandwidth is right now, I can't fit anything else in.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to take what I can right now and go with it. And one day my business will change again when maybe my kids are out of the house.
For sure.
Or they need me less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the high schoolers need me less already. And that's what I was able to come on board with you guys, you know.
Well, and I think the fact that you know your bandwidth, because one of the biggest mistakes people make is they're going to take on everything, right? If you got more than three goals, you're done. You're not going to achieve them, right? You have like those couple of things you can focus on, and family being one of them, right? Like then you've got even less bandwidth, but you can be really effective at the things you focus on. So I think that's really smart. You talked about helping people. I am a big believer we help people in this business. It's actually one of my favorite things too, because
big time.
So tell us more about that, because I think that says a lot about who you are and a lot about why you're doing so well, because people, they want the help when they really see it.
So I'm a big sucker, and I talk to a lot of people about setting boundaries. If you want to cut that out, cut it out.
That's funny.
The boundaries. I don't know when to set the boundaries. So we've talked about this. You know, somebody's calling you at 9 o'clock at night because they're, hey, AIM, time out. I'm struggling with XYZ. I answer the phone. I walk them through it. I help them. And maybe I shouldn't have, but it's allowed me to have, you know, 17 under my belt and at least five more settlements, maybe four more settlements before the end of the year that I know of.
Yeah.
So am I a sucker or am I just working too much? I don't know.
Sometimes you got to pick your spots, though, too. Like, I mean, if you're in, like, the middle of, like, trying to get something done, if you're going to ignore that, that's a bad move. And I think you just got to, like, tell – I mean, I tell my kids this all the time. My kids are younger than yours, and I'm like, hey, I got to, like – this is important.
I got to get this done.
I'll be back in 10 minutes. Like, yeah. It's not – and when you tell them that, I don't think it's a big deal. But then there's – I had a situation yesterday where someone's like, hey, we want to talk about something. And I said, great. Can I call you in 10 minutes? We're not available till 6 o'clock. And I'm like, I'm not on a Sunday at 6 o'clock, or this was over the weekend. I said, you know what? That's not going to work. How about right now? Or what's tomorrow morning look like? And they said 6:45 in the morning. I'm like, great, I'll call you then. Mm. No one's going to bother me then. So sometimes it's like you have to look at the urgency and the prioritization, like you talked about.
But it's not easy all the time.
It isn't.
You tell me, and I've picked this up from you from the beginning when I first met you, how you're so good at that. And
but it takes time.
I struggled, and then I think I'm getting better at it now. I had an agent last week at our meeting. You know, you have to set your boundaries. You don't ever set boundaries. And I'm like, you're so right. But did that help me sell what I've sold? I don't know.
I'm clear it did. And now you know how to do that. Your skills are better. Mm-hmm. So you can create more boundaries because, you know, sometimes the best ability is availability.
Yeah.
And that's real. But then the same as your skills get better and you have more confidence. You know, you're not going to lose the sale over not having that conversation right now. So it's an evolution. I think that's the fact that we're talking about it now. That shows like how you're getting, you know, a little better every day here.
Which is really cool. Setting boundaries. So let's see this time next year how many houses I sold. Setting the boundaries.
We'll have you back on the show. So last question for you. How do you pronounce your last name? Because I know how to pronounce it, but everyone calls you Amy Q. I think this is a genius branding move on your part because no one's going
to
forget
Amy
that.
Q. Everybody, every time I walk in, Amy Q's here. Amy Q. It's easy to remember. Quachari. Quachari is how you say it.
How do you feel
it.
About changing your last name?
Oh, my gosh.
This is a suicide for a lot of married women.
So, Dosa was my maiden name. Simple, four letters. Everybody could say it. Everybody could spell it. I met my husband, and I said, oh, my gosh. Come again? What? I couldn't even say it. So, I had to make it simple. So, Amy Q.
It could have been Tool. Just remember that. So it could have been a lot worse.
You can say it and spell it.
I don't think my wife was too happy about it at the beginning. So anyway. All right, Amy. Thanks for coming on. You want to follow Amy. She's on Instagram. That's the best place to get in touch. Actually, you can go to amyq.tomtool.com. That's her website. You can get in touch with her right there. We'll catch you next week on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. Oh, grateful to have you, Amy.